The first case to be heard this morning is number 2014-807, Columbus City Schools Board of Education versus Franklin County Board of Revision. The appellant is the property owner. Mr. Pirtle, please present your argument.
Thank you so much.
All right. The property at issue consists of 42 parcels scattered around central Columbus with 150 units. Now, the properties are subject to a LIHTC restriction. However, they operate as a HUD property. Approximately 8% of the rental revenue is LIHTC payments made by the tenants. 92% of the rental revenue is the HUD subsidy. So it actually operates as a HUD property, and we are dealing with tax lien date 2008. Because they're subsidized properties, the appraiser valued them the way he would any subsidized property with market rents. The Woda case came out in 2009. The appraisal was done in 2010, so there wasn't a lot of case law discussion about Woda at the time, and it seemed like the proper way to do it. We're appealing the BTA's decision here, and the BTA decision is primarily centered in one paragraph that spills over from page 2 to page 3 of their decision. And they make a couple of statements that LIHTC use restrictions must be taken into account when determining the value of LIHTC property, certainly true, and that Section 8 property should be valued in accordance with methods that disregard the affirmative value of the subsidies conferred by the federal government. Agree with that, too. And that's what the appraiser did in this case. He took the LIHTC restrictions into account in his appraisal report. He mentions them numerous times. In his testimony at the Board of Revision, he mentions them numerous times. But because the property was a HUD-subsidized property, he valued it as a HUD-subsidided property. And, the sentence, page 3 in the BTA decision, Section 8 property should be valued in accordance with methods that disregard the affirmative value of the subsidies. Again, that's what he did. He didn't use the actual rent, the actual HUD rent. He used market rent, market expenses. The last paragraph in that spillover paragraph on page 3, the BTA's rule decision, says, essentially, by valuing the subject properties using market rents, because the owner receives Section 8 rents, Mr. Miller ignores the LIHTC restrictive covenant in place and instead takes into account the value of federal government subsidies received through Section 8 rent. First, he did not ignore the LIHTC restrictive covenants. Again, he mentioned them numerous times. He took them into consideration. And the BTA decision says he takes into account the value of federal government subsidies received through Section 8 rent. We just don't think that's accurate. We think he disregarded the value from the Section 8 subsidies because he used market rent and market expenses.
Now, did the Board of Revision agreed with the appraisal?
Yes, I'm sorry, for 2008, but then there were, on January 1, 2008, the properties were 67% occupied. And there were many renovations. The part of town these properties in is, you know, not the most desirable part of town. So there were properties that were being rehabilitated, older properties built from like 1900 to 1950. So January 1, 2008, 67% occupied, getting rehabilitated. So some money was spent in 2009. So what the Board of Revision did was they jacked the value up for 2009 and 10 based upon the money spent to improve the properties. But we disagree with that. I was going to get into that later, because that's akin to a cost approach, and these are subsidized properties. So we don't think you should look at the cost of the properties, because, again, that's a cost approach, and these are subsidized properties. What the appraiser did was he stabilized the property in January 1, 2008. So instead of reducing in value for 2008, saying, hey, there's only 67% occupancy, he appraised it as stabilized for 2008, so therefore that value should have carried over to 2009 and 2010. So we simply think that...
Well, let me just pursue that line of questioning a little bit. Because so for 2008, the Board of Revision, which was an update year in Franklin County, the Board of Revision agreed with the property owner's appraised values.
Yeah, I think it was $2,830,000. Yes.
Okay. So is there an argument here that... That when the Board of Education appealed to the BTA, it had to present new evidence in order to restore the auditor's valuation?
Yes, yes, it's certainly true. The Board of Tax Appeals did revert back to the auditor's values, and that's what we disagree with. We said that because the property owner presented value, that the Board of Tax Appeals couldn't simply revert back to the auditor's value, that the Board of Education or some other party had to present evidence of value. So that's another reason we disagree with the Board of Tax Appeals decision.
Anything else that you want to present?
Yes. Okay. Simply that the appraiser did take the LIHTC restrictions into account. He valued the property in accordance with methods that disregarded the affirmative value of the government subsidies. The Board of Education indicates in their brief that actual rent should be used. Again, in this case, actual rents were 92% HUD subsidies. So if you pop the actual rents into the equation, what you would have is a value of government subsidies, not a value of real estate. So even if the appraiser didn't do it right, that's not the right way to do it. The Board of Education references the cost of improvements in 2009. I discussed that earlier, that because this is a subsidized property, we don't believe that cost should be taken into account. The appraiser used the income approach, stabilized in 2008, so therefore that should carry over into 2009 and 2010. Appraiser used his professional judgment. Mentioned earlier, WOTA was 2009. This was 2010. There wasn't a whole lot of case law at the time on LIHTC properties. The BTA made a conclusory statement in its decision that is simply not supported by the record. You know, the sentence I read, last sentence on the carryover paragraph on page 3, that the appraiser ignored the restrictive covenant. That's simply not the case. And he took into account the value of the subsidies through Section 8 rent. He didn't do that. He disregarded those. So I just think the BTA decision is wrong. You asked the question about the fact that he ordered that the auditor's values be reinstated. We don't think that's right, again, because there's a lot of evidence here in the appraisal. There's financial information in the addendum. Even if the Board of Tax Appeals didn't think the appraisal was right, they could have used the information there to determine a value. Mm-hmm. So what the property owner thinks is that the appraised value should be ordered, the $2,830,000 for 8, and because it's stabilized, carry over to 2009 and 10. Or if the court doesn't think that's the proper method, send it back to the Board of Tax Appeals and say you've got enough information in front of you to determine value. And those are all my points.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Pirtle. Ms. Allison.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Kim Allison, and with the Rich and Gillis Law Group, and I am here this morning on behalf of the Columbus Board of Education. In this case, the BTA properly rejected an appraisal report that valued the subject LIHTC property because the appraiser calculated the subject's gross potential income utilizing market rather than contract rents. Under the BTA's interpretation of this court's decision in WOTA IV Glenn, this decision was both reasonable and lawful, and we request this court to affirm the BTA's decision. As indicated, the property owner submitted the appraisal report of Mr. Miller at the Board of Revision hearing. In his report, Mr. Miller concluded that the subject property operates as a LIHTC, but also receives HUD Section 8 rents. In his report, he includes three different restrictive covenants. There's a 2004 amended restrictive covenant with HUD, a December 2007 restrictive covenant with the City of Columbus relating to home funds, and then the most recent restrictive covenant is the LIHTC covenant. Now, while all three of these covenants were contained in Mr. Miller's report, the supplement that was filed by the property owner indicates that it contains a copy of Mr. Miller's report that was submitted to the Board of Revision, but two of the three restrictive covenants are not in the appellant supplement. So we would just request that the court look at the report submitted as part of the BTA transcript in order to accurately glean the restrictions that were in place as of 1-1-2008. So in his report, Mr. Miller indicates that his conclusion of value for tax year 2008 is market value, fee simple, subject to LIHTC restrictions. But he did not value the property as a LIHTC. He valued the property under the hypothetical condition that the property receives market rents.
Let me ask you something. One of the puzzling features of the argument in this case is that one would expect the appraised value, the appraiser's value, is lower than the auditor's value.
Correct.
And one would expect valuing the property with the LIHTC restrictions and without Section 8 or other HUD subsidies, one would expect a lower valuation of the property. One would expect that those factors would tend to lead to a lower value.
That
so
is true.
It's an odd feature of the argument in this case that the appraiser presents a lower value based on whatever information from the market he has, and yet you're arguing that that is not as accurate a valuation as the auditor's, which was a much higher value.
Admittedly, this case does present a unique situation, and I do think that it highlights the problem with valuing properties based on rents that are not derived from the market. I mean, in this case, the LIHTC rents were higher than market rents. But in order to avoid a violation of Article 12, Section 2 of the Constitution, the rule has to be applied uniformly, regardless of whether the rents are above or below market. Also, the property has to be valued at its highest and best use. So if you start making a determination, the rule just has to be applied equally across the board. If this court determines that the BTA's interpretation of WOTA is not correct and that market rents rather than LIHTC rents should be used, I mean, that's fine too. But it just has, we can't distinguish based upon whether the LIHTC rents are above or below the market. That would be a constitutional violation of the uniformity rule.
But the appraiser has to take into account, doesn't he, the market rents more generally, given that there's so much subsidization of these rents.
Well, the record in this case is actually very sparse. We don't know whether the actual rents that are being collected are the LIHTC rents,
okay,
or whether they were established by HUD. And we have the three covenants. We know we have one rent roll that's not dated. We have no idea whether the rent rolls were established by LIHTC and then subsidized by Section 8 vouchers, or whether the rents were actually determined by HUD. And I think those are two very different situations. Unfortunately, in this case, we aren't able to tell which is which.
Okay.
So obviously, prior to its decision in WOTA, this court held that government-subsidized properties should be valued by using economic rents from conventional apartments. Then when the court decided WOTA, they distinguished the use restrictions imposed upon the LIHTC properties, finding that Congress's power to determine that the use restrictions imposed by LIHTC constitute police powers on limitations. Interestingly, the issue in WOTA versus Ivy Glen was whether the property, highest and best use of the property should be, which was also a scattered site property, should be considered as one economic unit or as individual single family homes. Mm-hmm. So in that case, the court never directed that actual rents were to be used. In fact, the only time they mentioned actual rents was when they deferred to the BTA's fact-finding determination, and they said it was up to the BTA to determine whether actual or contract rents should be used. So the BTA did this in this case, and they determined that actual rents were appropriate. So,
well, you're saying the BTA in this case determined that actual rents. When you say actual rents, you
contract.
Mean...
contract. Thank you.
You mean market rents?
Well, the BTA in this case determined the because it was a LIHTC property, it should have been valued using the contract rents.
Right. Okay. Right, because right. The appraiser had used market rents,
exactly,
and the BTA
right.
said no.
Right. So, and I think, the court's never said you have to use actuals. It's the BTA's interpretation of the court's decision in WOTA that kind of led to that result. And again, if the court determines that it's not appropriate, we're just arguing that the rule should be applied uniformly, regardless of whether the rents are above or below market.
But isn't it the case that, at least to some degree, the appraisal using market data tends to negate the auditor's valuation, doesn't it, to some degree?
Well, I mean, we would argue no. I mean, we would argue it is such a flawed methodology under the BTA's interpretation of WOTA that it doesn't constitute specific and plausible evidence is required in order to take, you know, the Bedford rule. So we would argue that that initial burden of proof has never been met, so we wouldn't even get to that.
Okay.
So under Vandalia Butler. You're
saying there's a legal error here.
Right, exactly, exactly.
In the BOR.
Exactly. Okay. So again, the record is unclear whether the rents received by the property owner in this case were established by HUD in the Section 8 program or by the Ohio Housing Finance Agency under the LIHTC restrictions. The BTA has determined that using actual rents is required for LIHTC properties, and that rule must be applied across the board. If we were to accept the property owner's argument that market rather than actual rents are appropriate, this court must hold that market rents should be utilized when calculating the gross potential income of all LIHTC properties, not just those when the actual rents are higher than the perceived market rent. We've also had some discussion about the BTA's determination of value for 2009 and 2010. There was absolutely no evidence submitted relating to the value of the property as of 1/1/9 or 1/1/10. Mr. Miller appraised the property only as of 1/1/08. And there were $13.7 million in renovations made to this property. So it would be our position that, you know, under Oberlin, generally the BTA has a duty to carry forward its value to subsequent years in the triennial unless there are substantial improvements made to the property. It would be hard to understand how $13.7 million does not substantially improve the property. In addition, it would be impossible to replicate the BOR's decision in this case. They based their 2009 and 2010 values based on Mr. Miller's value plus the contributory value of the 13.7 in improvements, but they don't say how they came up with their contributory value. So under subpoena, since it's impossible to replicate their decision, it cannot be upheld. Okay, so I guess just to summarize, and as a general rule, when the BTA reverses a decision of the Board of Revision, the Board of Tax Appeals is justified in reverting to the auditor's value when there hasn't been specific plausible evidence to indicate that the auditor's value was incorrect. And for those reasons, the Board of Education respectfully requests that this court affirm the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Allison. Mr. Pirtle, you've reserved, do we have a 7 minutes and 26 seconds.
All right. I'll be much quicker than that. I believe the Board of Education's attorney said in this case LIHTC rents were higher than market. We don't know about the LIHTC rents. 8% of the rents received were LIHTC. 92% were HUD subsidies. So I don't believe we can say that.
Didn't she also say that the record wasn't clear as to...
I got the appraisal here in my hand. The financial statements are in the addendum to the appraisal, and they've got the codes here, these, you know, the housing urban development codes.
If you could stand near the microphone so
I'm so sorry.
Hear this.
I'm so sorry. I've got the appraisal in my hand. In the addendum, I believe we have the 2009 and 2008 financial statements, and you have the codes that are put out by HUD, you know, 5120 rent revenue gross potential, that's the LIHTC rent received by the tenants, the 5121 tenant assistance payments, that's the HUD subsidies, so I think that's, you know, clear what it is.
So your position is that the record clearly establishes these elements of the rents.
Yes.
That you're talking about LIHTC and the HUD subsidy.
Yes. I think it is clear that what it is. So that was the other point. I believe the Board of Education's attorney said that in this case, the BTA said that the appraiser should have used the contract rents. I don't see that. I look at the BTA's decision, the paragraph that spills over from page 2 to 3. I see they're criticizing the way the appraiser did it. We say, we therefore do not find his appraisal probative of the subject's value as they existed on tax lien date, but I don't see anywhere in the Board of Tax Appeals decision where they say how it should have been done. They say the appraiser didn't agree with the way the appraiser did it, but I simply don't see the Board of Tax Appeals saying that in the decision. And as far as the new evidence for 2009 or 2010, He put out a value, a stabilized value as of January 1, 2008, and that should carry over to 2009 and 2010. Even though money was spent, subsidized property, we shouldn't use the cost approach. You know, the issue is what kind of income can it get? And again, this isn't the nicest part of town. These aren't palaces. They improved the properties to the point, rehabilitated the properties to the point where people could live there and they could collect rent. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Pirtle. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.